Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 91 of The Morning After. I'm your host, Jesse Kiefer. Sari Kamen is on assignment today, so she could not join us, but she's here in spirit. Last week, I had probably one of my proudest shows where I pulled together a group of women in the restaurant industry, and I discussed the Time magazine Gods of Food article, and I couldn't have been happier with the outcome of that, and I hope that talking about it kind of keeps the ball rolling and the discussion happening. And today, coincidentally, actually, I have a group of women who are running Edible Schoolyard in Brooklyn and in Harlem, and this is an Alice Waters project. So I'm really grateful that they're here, and maybe we will hear their two cents about the article and about just Alice Waters as a culinary figure. Also today, could not feel warmer in my heart, even though it's freezing cold outside. I am going to see my idol, my inspiration, Kathleen Hanna, present her film about her life called The Punk Singer. So I couldn't be happier. And the reason I get to go is former co-host Jen Tulloch. She's always on our brains here at The Morning After, and I thank her so much. In response to the interviews that we did on last Sunday, Erin Fairbanks, I ran into her. Erin Fairbanks, obviously executive director of Heritage Radio Network, ran into her at Roberta's on Monday, and she was really happy about the way the interviews went. And she and I were talking, and she's like, "I'm just so happy that, you know, you went through that, and that we did that, and we got all those voices heard. And I want to do something else. Like, I don't know what it is." And we were kind of brainstorming, and I went back to my lunch and my mimosa, and she went back to the offices, and her and our executive producer Jack Inslee, and with the help of my co-host Sari Kamen, they came up with a rap called "I Am a God," which is the most hilarious and fantastic thing I've heard in ages. And it was kind of, I don't want to give myself a lot of credit, but I'll give myself a little credit that it was, you know, slightly inspired by the interviews that I did. And Joe, do we have that fabulous rap, that Kanye-esque-ness?
I am a god. I am a god. I am a god.
I am a god.
I am a god. Hurry up with my mise en place. Hurry up with my equal jobs. Get me on the phone with Bill de Blas. I am a god. Even though I'm a woman of God, my whole life in the hands of God. So y'all better quit playing with God. Soon as I wife you, make them unwife you. Kissing people ass is so unlike you. Not every kitchen is run by white dudes. So here's a few strong ass women to fight you. And I don't wanna hear about what excites you. Listen up, here's a few facts to write you. Old media is still in high school. Sensipic clogs, they never like you. Dressed in whites with my hair pulled back. But everybody knows we brought food back. No one had swag, we the next track. Chang, Red Zeppi, Atala, fuck that. Cohen, Alice, Lois, Shinin'. We in this bitch, time to change the climate. Cooking this bitch, mad stars is my shine. Until the day we on the cover of Time. I am a god. I am a god. I am a god.
I am a god.
Incredible. Erin Fairbanks, MC on that. Jack Inslee definitely mixed that, threw in a little of his full service action. I love that, and it makes me so happy to hear that, and I hope we play it for years to come. We're going to take a small break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Edible Schoolyard with Kate Becher, Executive Director, and Morgan Rogers, Program Director. Taking a break here on The Morning After.
You are listening to Lung by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from The Morning After. This special program was brought to you by TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving creative professionals at all levels, from individual customers to Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation in their expertise in technology, sales, and service. Visit them on the web at techserve.com or in New York City at 119 West 23rd Street. Learn more about their in-store classes and incredible insider program. Make stuff happen. TechServe.
And we're back here on The Morning After. I am very honored to have these women in studio today. Kate Brashear is executive director of Edible Schoolyard NYC, and Morgan Rogers, the program director of Edible Schoolyard NYC. I was lucky enough to visit the garden at PS 216 in Brooklyn, and it was an incredible experience. And I'm totally happy that this is all happening in New York City. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So this was a program that was started by Alice Waters. As I read it, she passed by this school in Berkeley, and it felt sad to her, or it felt like it needed something else, and so she kind of met with the principal, correct?
Yep, that's right.
I'll let you finish the story, because I'm sure you know it by heart.
Yeah, so she was driving past a school that she went by every day in Berkeley, a middle school, and she made some comment in some article about how sad it was that the school didn't have a garden, and the principal actually contacted her and said, well, why don't we do something here? And so she started the Edible Schoolyard, and this was back in 1995, so, you know, a long time ago now, and really pioneered this idea that edible education, that teaching kids about food, should begin in schools, and that the school was the very best place to teach kids about having a connection with food. And, you know, she's a pioneer in the restaurant world, obviously, but she's a pioneer in this world of edible education as well. She really started this idea that we need to teach our kids about having a more healthy relationship with food, and doing it in the schools and building gardens and teaching kids how to grow food and prepare food and eat food and share food around a family table, that is such a powerful thing, and that we've lost that a little bit in today's environment and today's food culture.
Because I remember in middle school, I had, like, home ec. Mm-hmm. And it taught me how to... I actually don't remember... I haven't retained anything from
it. Right, yeah.
But it is kind of crazy that in 1995, there wasn't anything like that. So was the program successful immediately?
From what I understand, it took a little while to kind of find its feet. But... very, very quickly, I think the program saw that teaching kids in a very experiential way, like very hands-on, experiencing with all their five senses, is such a powerful way of connecting with children. And Alice's background, before she opened Chez Panisse, she was actually a Montessori teacher. So she has this... this sense and this feeling of, you know, Montessori is all about the experience. And so our philosophy and her philosophy is about experiential education, and that you learn through doing. And so, you know, over the years in Berkeley, and we've been in New York now since 2010, we've just seen just amazing things with the kids that we're working with. And that learning through doing is just such a powerful way of teaching, because if you do something, you remember it. It's mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's funny. It's home ec is something that probably our parents had, and maybe we had. I remember at my school, I was like the last year we didn't have it, you know, because my school was an all-girls school, and we're like, we're not teaching home ec. Like, we want these girls to go and
We're being progressive.
We're being progressive, right, exactly. And what we do now, it's very different from home ec. You know, we use the garden classroom, we call it a garden classroom, as a space where the kids are learning all kinds of different things. And we use the kitchen classroom as a place where they're not just learning how to cook. They're learning math. They're learning science. They're learning, you know, about sharing food and enjoying food and experiencing pleasure. And they're learning self-confidence, because they're learning about knife skills or creating a recipe that they've never had a chance to do before. So what we do, we believe, just goes so far beyond, you know, a traditional home ec. And it's mm-hmm. in the same way that Alice kind of pioneered this, you know, farm to table education, we I think and I believe have taken edible education and you know, done something that takes it to the next level. And here in New York City, you know, we've really made that program that Alice started out in Berkeley work for us here in New York, you know, in a very different climate for a start, and a very, very different school district as well. New York City is the biggest school district in the nation by a long way. We have over 1.1 million students in the public school district here in New York. And it, you know, working with a district that large and that it has its challenges. and so we've really taken that program and you know, made it work for us here in New York City.
I'll direct this question to Morgan. How you were previously a teacher,
yes,
at the school, and now you're program director. How exactly do you incorporate math and science and all of these other curriculum subjects into the classrooms?
We actually have a director of education who got her master's in her doctorate in curriculum development. So when I came on and started the kitchen program, there were no lessons, but she worked with us, and we also partnered with Columbia Teachers College. So we got, basically through our partnerships, the best of the best people to help us. Any teacher has a sense of, you know, how to teach a kindergartner versus a fourth grader, but to have someone who breaks it down grade by grade, what they need to learn in accordance with, you know, Common Core standards, so we can really integrate that in a fun way. It sounds so serious, but it really is just hands-on learning for the kids.
What sort of program or courses do you have as far as the kitchen classroom?
So our students at both schools, there's about 600 at each, they come in once a month to the kitchen classroom and twice a month to the garden classroom. And in kitchen, which is what I'm most familiar with, we teach a monthly seasonal recipe. So in October, for instance, it was soup making. And that is so awesome to teach kids about evaporation and, you know, all of these cycles that they need to learn anyway. It's a waste-free class. All the food gets reused to make stock for the next class, so nothing gets thrown out. So we're sort of tying in everything we want them to learn, and they're learning everything that they need to learn in science and math as well.
Kate, why was PS216 and PSMS7 in Harlem chosen as schools for this program?
So the program originally came to New York because we had some... John Lyons, our board chair, he had worked with Alice out in Berkeley, but he was based in New York, and he decided that he wanted to bring the program to New York City. And he'd worked with PS216 in Brooklyn before. He was part of a program called Principal for a Day, where people go and they act as principals in different schools. So he'd worked with the school before. It's a school in an area of Brooklyn that has very low amount of green open space. It's also a Title I school, which means it's a community that is a high poverty community. And it had a lot of space as well, which is we wanted for our first garden to be in a place where we could actually have an in-ground garden. And so he brought the program here in we started in 2010. And it's really been just such a great experience being in that school. It's an incredibly diverse population, many, many different nationalities, from Arabic to Polish to Russian. It's a real melting pot kind of school. And with our second school, we really wanted to be in a very high need environment again, but we wanted to choose a school that was a little bit different in terms of showing that you can do this model in a school that doesn't have a half acre of space that you can turn into a garden, that you don't necessarily need that. And so our second school in East Harlem, it's a very high-need school, Title I school. very high proportion of kids in that school are actually homeless or in temporary housing, over 20%, which is just a real kind of, it just shows the type of school that is. The principal there is also absolutely amazing. He's a real visionary and just works so hard to bring resources for his kids and just cares so, so deeply about the kids that are in the school. And so with that school, we are building, we're doing the garden in two phases. We have a courtyard garden, which we're doing in raised beds. And the idea there is that we can show people that, you know, if you don't have too much space, all you need is a little bit of space, and you can put a raised bed planter here and, you know, do something with kids in a smaller way, and you can take a classroom, any classroom, you don't need very much, and you can turn it into a kitchen classroom. So we're, and the other great thing about our second school in East Harlem is that it's also a middle school, so we're expanding our curriculum from elementary to middle school as well. And again, really, you know, our goal is to, what, we can't be in every school in New York City, but we can, we hope, show people what you can do. And we try and bring in teachers and educators to our schools to educate them about our curriculum and what we're doing. And so having two schools that are very different is a great way of showing, you know, you can make this work for your environment and your school.
Considering the demographics of both schools, I can imagine that it's a huge challenge to, while you're teaching these children how to do these things on the grounds of the school, how do you encourage them to take it home?
Yeah, that's a big challenge, and it's something that we think about all the time. We do a number of different things to really try and bring it home to the families. We do something called Family Cooking Nights, which is, Morgan can speak to the program a little bit more, but we basically invite families to come in and cook with the kids the recipes that they're learning in the kitchen classroom. And that's just been a wonderful way of, you know, expanding what we do in the classroom to the families and the communities.
Morgan, what has been the reception of that program?
It's been amazing, actually. It's one of the most feel-good times as a teacher that I've ever had. We started in Brooklyn. We've had up to over 100 people in the cafeteria making a spring pasta with favas and, asparagus. It was amazing. It was so wonderful, and actually in Brooklyn it was so successful. And then when we went up to East Harlem, I think what we found when we found out that over 20% of the students are in temporary housing, that we needed to sort of tweak how we approached it, because if we're measuring success by having the kids be cooking it at home, and that's not plausible, we sort of need to focus on the access piece. So I know we're talking with Just Food now about how to get, a farmer's market or a farm stand like we have in Brooklyn up there, so we can really provide the actual food that they could cook at home, because that's sort of, when you get a bunch of students that are becoming active change agents and want to cook and are sort of, you know, cheering along, and then they don't have the food, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think that the idea of green market and farm to table, even though it's such a simple idea, it is kind of equated with privilege.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, I mean, to hear that you guys are working to get green markets or the food that these kids would need to actually cook what they're learning is great. What challenges have you had with that?
The challenges are making sure that the community, if we brought it in, is ready to cook the food, is excited about it. And that's really where I think working with middle schoolers has been awesome, because, you know, I remember when I was in middle school, you know, you're very much in a fight the man kind of mentality. And when I was growing up, unfortunately, it was my mother that I was fighting. But sort of what we've been doing with a couple after school programs and with these middle schoolers is, you know, making the man the crappy food system and sort of talking to them and not just, you know, pulling the pieces together without them knowing, but saying, you know, does it piss you off that 20 blocks south you can get all this food that you just told me you would eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner if you could? So getting them, you know, amped up about healthy food and the unfair environment that they're in, and making them the people that, you know, are working with us to change their community is really what's been awesome. So yes, it's a challenge, but it's very cool to watch.
Right. And it's going to be these kids who are creating the change. You know, we can't come in and, you know, tell them that they should be eating kale and, you know, that this is the right way to do things. We try and be as positive as we can about, you know, the situation in which they're in, but they are seeing that there's a different way and that they can affect change, as Morgan said, and that's really, really powerful to see. We had one kid who, the principal of the school I was talking about, this amazing principal, and he said he was walking home one night and he saw one of the middle school kids carrying a bag of McDonald's, and he gave him the stink eye, you know, what are you doing with McDonald's? And the kid opened the bag and he had two salads in there, and he was like, you know, my mum gave me coupons so I had to go to McDonald's, but you know, I'm trying and I'm going to make a salad dressing that I learned in the class. So it's kids like that that have the autonomy and who are just in a little way like that, like it's those little victories that kind of keep us going. And the, you know, our program, we really believe that we're working with these kids for many years, you know, from pre-K through to eighth grade, and they are going to be the people who create change in our food environment. They are the future, and that's why we love working with kids, because they're the ones who are going to become the activists of tomorrow and change this food environment that we all know is a broken food environment.
Absolutely. I love where this conversation is going, and I'm going to take a break here. I know you have a lot of new things that are coming up. Maybe a greenhouse of sorts. So I can't wait to talk about that with you. We're going to take a break here on The Morning After.
You are listening to Bang Bang Sun by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Back here on The Morning After, talking with Kate Brasher and Morgan Rogers of Edible Schoolyard NYC. We were just kind of talking about some of their challenges, and I kind of want to direct this question to both of them. What's the hardest part of your day?
I can answer that.
Kate, this is Kate.
So I love what I do, and what I love about it is seeing the kids and spending time with the kids. But as the executive director of an organization, I'm also responsible for fundraising. And as anyone who knows and who works in nonprofit knows, it's
Heritage Radio
Network.
Heritage
Radio Network. I'm sure Aaron knows this very well. Fundraising is a continual part of what I do, and it, you know, we want to reach more kids, and to do that we need to continually raise more money. So just the continuing, not struggle, but the continuing work to continue to raise the money to do the work that we're doing, it's always there in my mind. And then I go into the garden and I see the kids, and it makes me happy because I know that what we're doing is having an impact.
And this is Morgan. I would say I actually, every day is a little different for me. 2 days a week, I'm at our East Harlem school. 2 days a week, I'm out in Brooklyn. And 1 day a week, I try to sit in front of a computer for an entire day, and it kills me. But up in East Harlem right now, we have our kitchen classroom and not much else. We are still in the building phase. The demolition is done on our office, but it just means it's a demolished area. So there's a little pantry inside of the kitchen classroom, which is my office for the time being. And having been...
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Slightly, yes. This is a townhouse compared
to the studio.
Yeah, what we're dealing with. But the hardest part is, because I started the kitchen program up there, is I actually have to hear all the fun and awesome things that are happening in the kitchen classroom, and then I have to close the door and work on my emails. So I guess that's a good thing. It means that the kids are having an awesome time, and I'm just jealous, but it's tough.
Something that was kind of struck me very much, and I have not been in an elementary school since I think I was in elementary school, which was, you know, only last year. But you were teaching a cooking class, and everyone had their knives, and you were asking them to name the different vegetables. I think you had like potatoes and leeks. And you had one girl who didn't speak English at all. She was Russian. And I can imagine that is a huge challenge for you. How do you kind of approach that? Because I don't know you, but I don't know. I don't think you speak Russian.
I don't. You called that right. It actually is something that makes what we do so fantastic. Because as a classroom teacher, it would be very difficult. But what we do is so hands-on that we do through showing regardless. So we actually have watched a lot of our English language learners, over time when they first get there, they speak no English. And actually one of our Russian students at Brooklyn, when he first came, spoke nothing and didn't say anything. And by the end of the year, he just had come up and he could say, you know, "This so good," and like smiled at me and was so proud. And he's actually the translator for a new Russian student this year. And that is actually what makes it easy is, especially at our school in Brooklyn, there's another Russian student in the room. We have them raise their hand if they speak Russian. We pair the kids up so that they can explain, you know, any instruction, and so that they can help out, which is great because it's teamwork.
Yeah. One thing that we've also seen as well, a lot of the kids, particularly in Harlem, have learning disabilities, and there's actually a second school in the building that we're in which has a very, very high percentage of kids with special needs and IEPs, individual plans for learning. And one of the things that's been really interesting about the program is because it's very different from sitting in a classroom and kind of studying, it's kids that really struggle in a classroom setting really blossom, pun intended, in the garden. And you know, there was one kid, we had a family day, an open day, up at our Harlem school a couple of weekends ago, and there was one kid who was, we were putting the planters in place, and so there was lots of measuring of where they needed to go, and you know, they had to kind of figure it out. And one kid was sort of leading this, and the principal was like, it's amazing. That kid, you should see that kid in the classroom. Like, he is completely different here. And because this experiential kind of learning and this very different kind of learning, it kind of transcends the classroom in a way that can be really, really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, when I was observing the kids taking this class, they, and just the kids in the garden, at the end of their garden classroom time, they all kind of sit in a circle and they answer questions, and so many of those kids were eagerly raising their hands, and the kids in the kitchen classroom were all like on their tippy toes, like excited to like to touch things, to cut things, to make the soup, and then to raise their hand to say, "Oh, I know what kind of vegetable this is." And So you can really, you know, just by witnessing that, I feel very privileged that I got to see that. But you can really see how that interaction is truly helping them.
Yeah, and we really try and bring, you know, we all love what we do, and our staff is so amazing at kind of, you know, communicating to the kids the joy and what they do. But I think that just the experience of eating good food and, you know, it tastes good, and it's, you know, so fun to, like, plant and get your hands dirty, and it's so different from what you're doing in your, you know, your regular day, that this sense of joy and wonder that can be a little bit lost in the school environment really comes to life in the garden or in the kitchen classroom.
Yeah, I would say, you know, none of the students actually at either of our schools have art class. So there's nothing like this in their day where they're not seated at their desk. And it is just so great to watch. And actually, the reason I think we're so successful with getting the kids to eat and love this food is that is what Kate just said. That's our approach to nutrition. So I think the classic thing that's going on right now is kids get brought into a room. They're told to eat this because it has vitamin A, B, and C, and this does this. And it's sort of what's happening in the food system in general. So we start with, let's cook this, let's eat it because it's delicious, and the kids love it, and then they start asking the questions, and then we start the conversation about, you know, why do you think this makes you feel so awesome? But it's great.
I was actually, when you were previously talking about, you know, the cooking classroom, I was thinking, oh, this is kind of like art class, like how I completely looked forward to doing that class. Like something active, something not at a desk, something not with a lecture, because lectures really don't do much. So it's cool that you kind of, you've said that, and I hate that there's no art in that school.
I know.
It's wild. And, you know, us as New Yorkers, we understand that there is not a lot of greenery around. I mean, there are parks, but I mean, I've tried my damnedest to grow a plant in my apartment, and it's impossible if you don't have complete direct sunlight. Do you think that something like this can work in all schools, you know, across the country where people do have gardens and people do have space? Do you feel like it can be implemented everywhere?
I really do. I mean, I think that, you know, what we hope, I think, as a program is that there is no need for us, that this kind of education is in every school and is part of the curriculum. You know, as you do science, you would do garden and kitchen classes, but we're a long way from that. But there is no reason why this can't be in every school. I think, you know, what it needs to make that happen is someone in the school, whether it's a parent or a teacher, who has, you know, has a passion to make it happen. And it doesn't need to be a program like Edible Schoolyard, and it doesn't need to be as extensive as our program. You know, it could be just a few herbs on a windowsill, or it could be just a planter in the back garden, or it could be a half acre garden or a full acre garden in places where you have space. It's a universal language of food and being connected with the earth and your community and your environment.
And that's actually sort of where we're working now. And this next phase of our organization and is so cool for me because I'm a total nerd and I love teaching kids cooking. And so what we've done is we've taken our lesson plans and we've written them up, and you know, it says what Common Core standard these are hitting, and we've started a professional development program. So we are bringing in teachers across the city, actually, and outside of the state, I think, at times. We're inviting everyone in to the showcase schools and using them as demonstration sites. And our teachers show these teachers how to teach a lesson in cooking and gardening. Our garden manager says, here's how you do it with a half-acre garden. Here's how you do it if you have, you know, one window where you can teach kids about seed-to-table cooking. So we're really thinking the same thing that you're asking, which is we're saying you can do this, and here's how you do it, which is really exciting.
I know that you have some kind of new developments happening. I was there to see this gorgeous greenhouse and classroom that you guys are building. Just tell me about how that came to be.
Sure. So we have just in the final stages of building a new kitchen classroom, which is on the ground floor, right, leading out into the garden, and it has an attached greenhouse so that we can really do four-season education. We teach year-round, and we always have done, but now we have this amazing greenhouse, which is really kind of an outdoor classroom. And the kitchen, which was previously on the fourth floor in a room that had no sink, that you couldn't plug in two things at the same time without the fuses all blowing. Now we have this state-of-the-art kitchen classroom that has ovens, and it has dishwashers, and it has... Morgan is silently cheering here. She's done a lot of washing up. And it's just going to be this incredible space for these kids to learn about, you know, cooking their food, and we'll be able to teach even more skills. You know, we're going to do a bread baking class, which we've never been able to do before.
I want to learn how to do that.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to sit in on that class. So we can really take our program to the next level. And we've been incredibly lucky both to have the space. The new building is at our Brooklyn school, to have the space and to have the support of Dominic Recchia, the local council member, and the Brooklyn borough president to support us in building this building. And as you know, as Morgan was saying, it's amazing for the school, but it also means that we can bring more people in to learn about what we do, because we know how lucky we are, and we know how lucky this school is, and we don't want to just... you know, we love what we do with that school and that community, but it's more than that. It's a demonstration site. It's a showcase site where we can bring people and show them what we're doing, and hopefully have more of an impact on all the kids in New York City and more broadly.
How do teachers who are interested in learning more about this, or parents or potential donors, kind of get in touch with this program?
There's a number of ways. We love people to come and visit, so please do come and visit. You're always welcome to come. And our outreach coordinator at our school, Stacey Slate, you can email her, ss@esynyc.org, if you're interested in visiting. We also have a program with chefs where we try and bring chefs into the schools as well, and, you know, chefs or people in the food business or people who have some kind of connection with food, or, you know, some, they could be like a cheesemonger or a farmer, or, you know, someone who can talk about food in a different way and give these kids exposure to a different aspect of food. And so we invite people into the schools to talk to kids and teach kids about what they do. So if anyone is interested in that, we are always delighted to host people. And then, of course, if anyone's interested in donating, you can also visit our website, www.esynyc.org, and click on the donate page.
Yep, and you can also find our professional development dates on there. So for interested teachers or people who want to bring it to their school, I think that's where you'd go.
Yes.
I guess I also want to kind of close this with, what did you both do before you got involved in this?
So my background is not really in nonprofit. I worked in corporate marketing in beauty and in food. I worked for Pete's Coffee and Tea. I'm still a Pete's fan for a number of years out in California.
So you came from the Northern California side.
I came
side
from the
life.
Northern California. Yeah, yeah. So I was familiar with Edible Schoolyard from living in Berkeley, and just knowing about Alice and being an incredible fan of Shea Panisse and everything that she had done. And so came to it kind of from that angle.
Yeah, and I started actually out of college. I worked for a financial services startup. So not quite what I'm doing now. And then I started working for a for-profit kids cooking company called Taste Buds, which was awesome. And then I went to culinary school and fell in love with being in the kitchen, and worked actually for a couple of years at Wellness in the Schools, which we partner with now. They run the cafeteria side of sort of the Good Fight, and finally found my way here to my home.
So what is up and coming aside from the greenhouse?
We have a we're doing our big opening ceremony for the greenhouse and kitchen classroom. We're also continuing to work on our professional development, and you know, as Morgan said, we invite everyone to come. And then we're looking for our next schools that we can partner with. We're hoping to be in a couple of new schools next year. We're looking at the South Bronx possibly as a site. More schools, we hope, in New York City.
Yeah, and we're having a party. Our favorite way to raise money is bringing everyone together around food and a little booze, which we don't do in our rest of our programming. They don't let us. But we are having an event at Haven's Kitchen after Thanksgiving to kick off the season.
Are tickets available for that?
We still have a few tickets left, yeah.
Where can we order those?
On our website. Go to our website.
The esynyc.org. I want to give a shout out to Cecilia, who is our who's a teacher.
Yeah, she's our rock star garden teacher.
At PS216. She's also Joe, our rock star engineer's sister. Joe, you want to give Cecilia a shout out?
What's up, Cece?
Aw, I thought you were going to say, like, you stink, Cece. Like, that's what I would have said.
Not on the radio.
We love Cece. She's great. All our teachers, all our staff are amazing. I want to just give our staff a quick shout out, because we couldn't do what we do without our just incredible, passionate, dedicated staff. So to Cece and all the rest of you rock stars, thank you.
And I say thank you. To them and to both of you, Kate and Morgan, thank you so much for being here. Maria Brinkman is someone I know through the restaurant world who is now working with Edible Schoolyard NYC, and she got me in touch with these ladies, and I couldn't be happier. It's a great show.
We're gonna take a break.
I am gonna be leaving here on the morning after. This has been a great show, guys. I won't be here next week. Thanksgiving time, say no to Black Friday. This is The Morning After on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.